You are joining us today for a deep dive that honestly feels less like political analysis and more like we're dissecting a high-tech military operation, almost.
Yeah, it really
was. We're talking about Moldova, a small country, you know, on Europe's eastern flank. It just faced what officials there are calling an unlimited hybrid war.
Mm-hmm.
And our sources, well, they lay out the entire blueprint, how this campaign was run, right down to the budget, the specific AI tools used for propaganda, even the involvement of sanctioned Russian state banks.
That's really the crux of it. Moldova, you know, geographically, it's sandwiched between Ukraine and Romania, a NATO member.
Oh, yeah.
So it was the perfect testing ground.
A test bed, basically.
Exactly. But the strategy, it was never just about Shina. Our sources are clear. The objective was testing the full toolkit needed to disrupt a European democracy. The bigger target was always the European project itself.
So our mission today is to really unpack those operations, the ones deployed specifically to swing the parliamentary elections back on September 28, 2025. And the political goal, well, it couldn't be much clearer, could it? Crush institutional trust, weaken the whole democratic setup, and crucially, derail Moldova's path towards the EU, which has been picking up speed.
The stakes were incredibly high. It was, you know, a maximum effort campaign.
So the big question then, did it actually work?
Well, let's start with the bottom line.
Okay.
No. Ultimately, the interference failed to achieve that core strategic goal. The pro-European party, PAS, Party of Action and Solidarity, founded by President Maya Sandu, they secured a decisive majority.
What were the numbers?
They got 50.20% of the vote. That translates to 55 out of the 101 seats in parliament.
50.2%. So just over the threshold needed to govern alone.
Precisely. And that's a major blow to Moscow's plans. It means PAS isn't forced into a coalition with parties that have totally different aims.
Right. And the pro-Russian opposition.
The Patriotic Electoral Bloc, BEP.
Yeah.
They ended up with 24.2 registered seats, so 26 seats. Considering the sheer amount of resources poured in, our sources frame this as a significant defeat. A public humiliation, even, for Russia.
Okay, resources. Let's talk about the money, because this is where it gets really interesting. It's not just old-school vote buying, is it? This feels like high-level financial warfare skirting sanctions.
Oh, absolutely. The figures are, well, they're staggering. Moscow allocated, at a minimum, 100 million for these destabilization ops.
100 million euros. Minimum.
Minimum. And Moldovan government officials, they're suggesting the real number could be over 200 million.
Wow. How is that kind of money moved? Who's orchestrating it?
Largely, it's funneled through this fugitive Moldovan oligarch, Elon Shore. He's already sanctioned by the U.S. and the U.K., specifically for corruption and, you know, running these kinds of malign influence operations. And he's doing it all from Moscow.
So he's directing traffic from there.
Directly. And this isn't his first rodeo. In past elections, his schemes used these complex offshore networks, front parties, funneling something like $39 million just for outright vote buying back then.
But this time it seems more advanced. You mentioned cryptocurrency.
Yes, this is where the financial mechanics get really cutting edge almost. How do you move potentially 200 million past international scrutiny? Cherfo used a specific ruble-based stablecoin. It's called A7A5.
A ruble stablecoin?
Yeah.
Okay. How does that bypass sanctions?
Because it wasn't moving through the usual regulated crypto exchanges. It was essentially laundered.
Yeah.
Passed through black market crypto exchanges, a network spanning Turkey, the UAE, Lebanon.
So completely off the grid, financially speaking.
Pretty much. Then converted into local currency, pumped back into the political operations in Moldova. It's a novel way to dodge sanctions, really exploiting the gaps in stablecoin regulation to inject huge amounts of untraceable cash.
That's fascinating. A purpose-built financial system for interference. But you also flagged a direct banking link. That seems incredibly brazen.
It is. The money trail leads straight to Promsvia's bank. PSB. Now, this isn't just any sanctioned Russian state bank.
No.
PSB is the official bank for the Russian Defense Ministry.
Wait, the Ministry of Defense's bank?
The very same. And the connection isn't subtle. PSB is listed as a shareholder in one of Shore's own companies.
So the illegal influence of FUT, using stablecoins, is directly linked to a Russian state, even military financial structures.
It's not just tacit approval. It looks like an active partnership. This whole illicit finance operation is integrated.
Incredible. Okay, so this massive amount of money.
Yeah.
What was it actually used for on the ground, beyond the big picture?
Well, they needed people, foot soldiers, for the influence campaign. So recruits were paid 3,000 Moldovan lei. That's about 170 US per month.
Just for posting on social media.
Just for pumping out social media content. And remember, Moldova is the poorest country in Europe. $170 a month is significant income for many.
And it didn't stop there.
No, the payments escalated. Shore is now openly offering $3,000 a month for people to participate in anti-government protests.
$3,000 a month? That's serious money.
It shows the level of investment in destabilization, and we also saw them leveraging existing sanctioned entities.
Like that NGO, Evrazia.
Exactly. Our sources found links between Shore's network and Evrazia. Now, Evrazia was already sanctioned EU, US, UK for allegedly bribing people to vote against EU membership in a referendum last year.
So the infrastructure was already there, funded and operational.
Seems like it. Even though that referendum passed narrowly for the EU, the network clearly didn't just pack up and go home.
Okay, so if 2024 was about refining the financial tools, the Moldovan police chief flagged that this year, 2025, the main focus really shifted. Information warfare took center stage.
Absolutely. This is where AI, deepfakes, TikTok, they became the primary weapons.
The scale sounds immense, especially for a small country.
It really is. Moldova's population is only about 2.4 million. But the core disinformation network, coordinated on Telegram, well, analysis by DFR Lab, showed the broader network pulled in over 55 million views.
55 million views.
And 2.2 million likes on TikTok. Just since January, that's complete content saturation. It's an unbelievable scale for that population size.
And how are they producing this volume? You mentioned AI.
Yeah, they were essentially automating the production of lies. Our sources detail how recruits were specifically trained to use generative AI ChatGPT in this case to just churn out social media posts, TikTok, Facebook.
So it wasn't about quality or subtlety. It was just speed and volume.
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't need creativity. They needed to flood the zone. And the content itself, it was disturbing.
What kind of things were they pushing?
Recruits were told to publish totally unfounded claims. Things like the current government was planning to falsify the election results anyway, or that joining the EU meant citizens would have to change their sexual orientation to LGBT.
Wow. Using commercial AI tools to automate panic about human rights and sow social division.
Precisely. And it got even darker. One specific instruction told people to push the narrative that Sandu's regime uses children as a living currency, accusing the president of facilitating child trafficking.
That's beyond political criticism. That's radical dehumanization.
Absolutely. Designed to trigger visceral fear and hatred.
And beyond just automating these basic lies, there was more sophisticated tech involved. You mentioned the Matryoshka project.
Right. Matryoshka seems to be the umbrella term for their next-gen disinformation tactics. This involved deploying AI-generated deepfakes, but also creating what they call media mimicries.
Media mimicries. What are those?
High-quality, fake replicas of legitimate news outlets, websites, social media pages that look exactly like the real thing. They pushed these out, especially on platforms like TikTok, targeting younger audiences who might be less savvy about spotting fakes.
It's a multi-layered deception.
Yeah.
And there was that one tactic, almost absurd in its audacity, blending the digital with the deeply traditional.
You mean the church icon tactic?
Yeah.
It's incredible. Operatives linked to Shore actually put small QR codes on the back of religious icons being distributed during church services.
A QR code on a church icon.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when someone scanned it, maybe out of curiosity, it led them straight to a Telegram channel.
And the channel offered
payment, either for their vote or for agreeing to spread disinformation online. It's this fusion of faith, finance, and digital sabotage, all aimed at undermining trust in, well, everything, even religious institutions.
Okay, so we've got illicit finance, AI propaganda, religious manipulation. But the campaign wasn't just virtual. There were direct efforts to sabotage the election process itself. Operational stuff, cyber warfare, aimed at setting the stage for chaos.
That's right. And the polling subversion tactic is, well, it's brilliant in a really cynical way.
How did that work?
Operatives were paid cash about 200 li, maybe $12 an hour, to conduct completely fake unofficial polling for organizations that didn't even exist.
So just generating fake data.
Not just that. They were trained to subtly try and sway the people they were polling towards the pro-Russian side. But here's the crucial part. They were told to secretly record anyone who did express support for the pro-Russian opposition.
Why record those people?
Because the goal wasn't the poll itself. The goal was to build a stash of evidence, fake poll results, recordings of supposedly pro-Russian voters, which could all be leaked immediately after the election if PAS won.
Ah, so they were manufacturing the proof for fraud claims before the election even happened.
Exactly. Pre-staging the chaos. engineering the narrative to deny legitimacy to a result they clearly expected and feared.
And this planned chaos wasn't just digital leaks or fake polls. They were prepping for physical unrest, too.
Yes. Russian operatives drew up detailed scenarios for large-scale street violence. We're talking coordinated arson, organized hooliganism, even simultaneous false bomb threats designed to paralyze emergency services and government institutions.
Were they training people for this?
Our sources indicate some Moldovans actually received training in Serbia, conducted by Russian special services, learning tactics for street violence, mobilization, how to escalate things quickly.
And meanwhile, the cyber front was blazing.
Incredibly active. It was very targeted. Back in August, the Moldovan parliament got hit with a major hack. 300,000 emails were leaked.
And then used in the campaign.
Weaponized. Huh. Used to spread fake news and disinformation in those critical final weeks. Microsoft flagged a specific Russian hacking group, Storm 1679, shifting its focus squarely onto the Moldovan election as early as April 2025. That shows long-term planning.
And the platforms themselves noticed.
Oh, yeah. Google reported terminating over 1,000 YouTube channels just since June 2024, all involved in coordinated influence operations targeting Moldova. The scale of the cyber effort matched the info war effort.
Let's shift to another major pressure point, the energy weapon. Moldova's dependence here is stark.
It's a huge vulnerability. Moldova gets up to 80% of its electricity from power plants in Transnistria, the breakaway region. And those plants run predominantly on Russian gas.
Which Moscow can control.
Precisely. And they timed an economic crisis perfectly. In January 2025, Ukraine stopped transiting Russian gas through its territory. That deal ended.
Right.
Just a month before that, in December 2024, Gazprom, the Russian state gas giant, suspended deliveries to Moldova directly. They cited a disputed debt claim of $709 million.
Was the debt real?
And an international audit suggested the actual figure was closer to $8.6 million. But it didn't matter. The political damage was done. The gas was cut off right when the transit route also closed.
And the impact on ordinary Moldovans?
Brutal. A 50% jump in electricity prices. A 25% increase in heating costs. Right before an election, that puts immense pressure on the ruling pro-EU party.
Did Europe try to help offset this?
Yes. The EU mobilized significant support. There was a $250 million package specifically aimed at easing the energy crisis.
But did it get where it was needed? Especially in Transnistria, where the power plants are.
That's the problem. The Transnistrian authorities, the separatists, they rejected the EU aid.
Rejected it. Why?
Moldovan officials publicly stated it was due to direct pressure from Moscow. The goal, it seems, was to maintain control over Transnistria and keep that energy crisis politically potent. Instead, Transnistria accepted some temporary supply fixes backed by Russian credit.
So Russia effectively blocked EU aid to keep the pressure on?
It appears so, maintaining leverage.
Now, it's really important here, I think, to acknowledge that while this external interference is massive, it works best when it exploits real existing problems inside the country.
Absolutely critical point. You can't just invent dissatisfaction out of thin air on this scale. Moldova is still Europe's poorest country. Corruption is endemic. Poverty is high, about a third of the population below the poverty line.
So the opposition narratives have fertile ground.
Exactly. Voters are genuinely unhappy about the ruling. PA's party struggles to deliver on promises, better jobs, higher wages, stable pensions. These bread and butter issues, combined with corruption concerns, remain central for voters. It creates these, well, almost perfect laboratory conditions for hybrid warfare tactics to land with maximum impact.
You can't easily destabilize a country that's already stable, prosperous, and has high public trust.
It's much, much harder. These internal vulnerabilities are the amplifier for external interference.
Given all this pressure, how did the international community, especially the EU, respond beyond just the energy aid?
The EU response was actually quite aggressive and rapid this time. They launched a $1.9 billion growth plan for Moldova. They significantly sped up EU accession talks. There's talk of potential completion by 2028 now.
That's fast.
Very fast. And they signed a new security and defense partnership called SAFE-E. Moldova is the first non-EU country to get this kind of arrangement.
And the cyber help.
Yeah, the EU rushed to deploy its cyber rapid response team, the first operational deployment for that team since it was created, which shows the perceived urgency.
But the picture wasn't all positive on international support, was it? Our sources mentioned a shift from the U.S.
That's right. Unlike the really tight 2024 presidential election, where U.S. support was maybe more visible, this cycle seemed different. We saw reports about U.S. high being dismantled, potential cuts impacting U.S. cybersecurity agencies like CISA.
And that had a real impact on the ground.
Moldovan officials told our sources it resulted in a significant negative impact on their ability to fight these hybrid threats. They found themselves relying more heavily on EU funding and even private contractors to bolster their defenses this time.
So summing up, Moldova managed to hold the line. They avoided what some feared could be a Georgia scenario, that slow drift back into Moscow's orbit.
Yes, that immediate catastrophic outcome was averted, but the sources are crystal clear. This fight is nowhere near over.
What's the long-term defense?
Fundamental reforms. That's the only sustainable answer. Improving living standards, seriously tackling corruption, strengthening governance. That's how you reduce the vulnerabilities that Russia exploits so effectively.
And there's a bigger challenge too, right? For Moldova, but also for other democracies facing this.
Definitely. How do you defend yourself against these increasingly blatant AI-powered influence campaigns without damaging your own democratic values?
Yeah.
Without sacrificing pluralism and civil liberties in the name of security? That's the tightrope walk. That's the next huge hurdle.
Okay, so we've really gone through it all today. A full deep dive. We've seen this absolute integration of modern hybrid warfare tactics. Illicit finance through sanctioned military banks, AI-driven lies weaponized against kids, operational sabotage designed to pre-cook chaos, all focused on one single parliamentary election in Europe.
And here's the really provocative thought we want to leave you with today. Our sources are indicating that the Kremlin wasn't just trying to win in Moldova. They explicitly used it as a laboratory.
Laboratory for what?
For testing the scalability of AI-driven content saturation, for perfecting the targeted rapid radicalization of adolescents using platforms like TikTok. Think about these methods, the deepfakes, the A7A5 crypto channels, those shocking QR codes on church icons. If these tactics prove even partially effective, tactically successful on Europe's eastern frontier,
then the question becomes,
what concrete, urgent steps do global democracies need to take right now? To safeguard their own elections, yes, but maybe even more critically, to protect their youth from these interference methods that have now been field tested and refined. The experiment seems to be over, and the results are likely being exported as we speak.